There was a time before liberation, when all the witches were mad and moonstruck, when the shrinking and the shocking and the mocking were rife. We still found each other,
the ones in the life. There was a time before demonstrations, when the queens and fairies were shy and fearful. We ran and we hid from the fist and the knife, and we still found each other, the ones in the life.
Do you know Dorothy?
Do you have the time?
Have you got a light, dear?
Change for a dime? Do you come here often?
I see what you mean.
I know a tavern
where we won't be seen. There was a time before celebration, when all my sisters were ghosts and shadows. Every femme had a butch, every husband a wife, and we still found each other, the ones in the life. Do you know Dorothy? Do you have the time? Have you got a light, dear? Change for a dime. Do you come here often? I see what you mean. I know a tavern where we won't be seen. There was a time back before Stonewall, we heard the jokes and we joined the laughter. We lied and we passed and avoided the strife, but we still found each other, the ones in the life. We still found each other.
That song was called Before Stonewall, and it came from a musical called 10% Review from 1987. Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT, and I'm J.D. Doyle. On tonight's edition of Queer Music Heritage, we're going to pick up from where we left off last month with my review of an important area of our musical culture, the gay musical. And just to recap a little, on these two shows, I'm only talking about musicals where being gay or lesbian was the central part of a play's focus. So that leaves out shows, even Broadway ones, that may have had gay characters, like Chorus Line or Rent. And I'm also trying to limit my focus to only those musicals that had soundtracks that were commercially released. I left off last month in 1984 with the big Broadway hit Le Cage aux Folles. And the first musical I'm featuring on tonight's show happens to have been written by an artist with whom I'm pleased to say has become a friend over the years, Tom Wilson Weinberg. I featured Tom's career in more general terms on my April 2001 show, but wasn't really able to get into too much depth on his musicals. We'll correct that omission shortly, as he has two musicals being featured on tonight's show. The first was called 10% Review, and it was produced in 1987. I'm going to share some interview comments from Tom on the show. Tom, tell us about 10% Review.
In 1984, my lover and I moved to Boston, where he had a job, and I ran into a guy that I had met only briefly a few years earlier by the name of Joey Brandon, an actor and singer, and he asked me what I was up to, and told him that I was still writing and performing, and had made a couple of albums, which he knew he had the albums. And it was his idea to put the songs into the form of a musical review. I hadn't really thought about it, but I said, well, let's get together and talk about it. And when we met, he had a list of songs, and he had a concept. Two women, two men, piano, maybe a bass player, maybe a drummer, and we would sing and perform these songs and stage them. So we went ahead and did it, and Joey was in the first production, and the show was in the Arlington Street Church in Boston in March of 1985, and we had no idea. You know, we thought maybe we would just run for a couple of performances, but the newspapers came and liked it and gave it a lot of attention, and pretty soon we were selling out every performance. It was very exciting, and it kind of took us all by surprise. We were pretty naive, but we had a great time. And the show then went to Provincetown for a 10-week season, which was tremendously successful, and a lot of people from around the country saw it, and that gave us a big boost because people wanted to bring it to their cities. So pretty soon a producer signed on by the name of Laura Green, and she led us around the country and eventually to New York, where we had a good long run at the Actors Playhouse, and then the show was published, and it's had more than 50 sit-down productions, been all over the place, including a very nice production by the group in Houston, and it continues to get produced once in a while.
Do you have any special memories about a particular 10% review performance?
Yes, what a great question. There is a particular 10% review performance that I'll never forget. Most of the material was funny, and of course that's what we were going for, to give people a good time and to have fun and to make political points in a humorous way. In the summer of 86, we were performing in Provincetown, and on a particular day, the news came down that the Supreme Court had made their decision in Hardwick versus Bowers, the notorious Georgia case, where the Supreme Court essentially said that same-gender partners do not have a right to privacy of sexual conduct, even in their own homes. We were devastated by the news, and that night when we did our performance, we stopped the show at a particular point, and one of our cast members, Jennifer Firestone, told the audience about the decision, and then we went right back into the show and continued with it with one of our more serious songs that felt relevant to that moment. And people were crying, we were crying, and I'll just never forget it. It just gave the show a certain immediacy that was exciting and very vital. And then over the next few days, I wrote a song about the whole business, which is called And the Supremes, a spoof on the Supreme Court and on that dreadful anti-sex decision, and we put it in the show a few weeks later, and it remained in the show and continues to be performed whenever the show is performed.
The highest court in the land has spoken. The Supremes have issued their tome. But we'll keep breaking laws that we have always broken, especially in private, at home. What kind of dreams would the Supremes dream? Trust us. Sodomy would change your fortune. We've only got nine judges and five don't like to screw. No, 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 no. What kind of dreams would the Supremes dream if only Republic, privacy's gone public. It's enough to make you scream. Try it, Your Honor. Try it, Sandra Day O'Connor.
Do it, Sandy.
Cunnilingus or fellatio.
Try fellatio.
We've only got nine judges and five don't like to blow.
No, no, no blow.
The highest court in the land has issued to every city and town a rule that we must keep on fighting. This time, let's fight lying down. What kind of dreams would the Supremes dream if only they could dream in their marble tower with so much power? Things ain't what they seem. Whites had many lonely nights. He still could change his
luck.
We've only got nine judges and five don't like to.
Ain't no court supreme enough. Ain't no court supreme enough. Ain't no court supreme enough
to keep me from my dreams.
Ain't no court supreme enough. Ain't no court supreme enough. Ain't no court supreme enough to keep me from my dreams. Ain't no court supreme enough.
No, no.
Ain't no court supreme enough. Ain't no court.
That song was called And the Supremes. I wanted to particularly highlight Tom's comments on the 1986 Supreme Court ruling, which is obviously relevant to recent events. As I said in last month's show, it's really hard to find lesbian musicals to talk about. I'm not sure if it's a cultural thing, based on the notion that gay men are more interested in musicals. It's in their genes, you know. But there's a huge lack of musicals just about lesbians. I played a song from an English show last month called I Like Me Like This, and I've only found one other show to share that fits this bill. In 1983, in Seattle, there was a lesbian feminist theater group called Front Room Theater, and they staged a production called In Search of the Hammer, and it did so well that 2 years later it was followed with the sequel, The Return of the Hammer. The shows were not actually recorded until 1988, when the casts were reunited to capture both productions on tape. I was able to talk with the writer of the play, Cappy Cotts, who still lives in Seattle, about the show. How did you come to write In Search of the Hammer?
Well, I was writing other material at the time, and then the woman who started Front Room Theater was looking for plays, obviously, because it was her theater, and so she encouraged me to write something. So it kind of came out of a conversation I had with two other gals at a party. At the party, we created the Three Must Be Queers, and then I just set about writing about their adventures. And then my collaborator, Fran Prickett, wrote the music.
The Three Must Be Queers. I like that. The plot is a little complex from what I've read. Can you kind of sum it up, the plot of In Search of the Hammer?
In Search of the Hammer was basically, you know, we had a local artist make us what looked like an old Labrys. So it was that was the symbolic hammer. And it had been found in an archaeological dig, and it was a very precious find. And then Reagan decided to claim it as kind of his symbol, I guess. And so then the Three Musketeers decided that they would have to go to Washington, D.C. and get it back.
This was kind of a feminist fantasy adventure?
Yeah, it was kind of.
Tell me about the song, Clothes Don't Make the Amazon.
That kind of dealt, so that ended up being the Three Musketeers. They were basically three butch dykes. That was their last kind of test that they had to do.
It seems that in the plot, in order to rescue the hammer, they had to get into a fancy ball, and therefore had to wear gowns, which of course went against the grain of any butch dyke. So the song maintained that it was worth the struggle.
You're a big, strong woman and a handsome one too. Gonna let a dress make a sissy out of you. You're not afraid of danger. You're not afraid of pain. Gonna let a piece of cloth bring you shame. It's not the pants, not the pants that make you strong. It's not the pants, not the pants that make you strong. It's not the pants that make you strong. Oh, 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 the clothes don't make the Amazon.
That was Clothes Don't Make the Amazon from In Search of the Hammer. In Los Angeles, Theater Rhinoceros bills itself as the nation's longest-running lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender theater company. And since they began in 1977, that's probably correct. And looking at their website, I'm familiar with a good many of their past productions. I wish more of them were recorded for commercial release. One that was, from 1990, was for the musical Dirty Dreams of a Clean-Cut Kid, and it was perhaps the theater's biggest hit. It's a nostalgic look back at the pre-AIDS gay life in San Francisco via musical reflections from five men anxiously awaiting HIV test results. I talked to John Carr, one of the show's co-directors. John, tell us about your involvement with Theater Rhinoceros.
When the theater first began, I was a reviewer for the local gay paper, and so reviewed their productions and was, of course, wildly supportive. Within a couple of years, they moved to a larger space, which is the one they currently are in, a larger and more formal space. They'd been in a storefront, and then they moved into an actual theater space. And at that time, I had become the editor of the newspaper and was able to throw them much support. 3 years later, when I stopped being editor, I was hired to be the theater's publicist. And after I had a season or so of that under my belt, I directed my first production there, which was a double bill of Al Carmine's In Circles, with a text by Gertrude Stein. And a friend of mine had set seven poems by Frank O'Hara to music, a song cycle that we staged as a curtain raiser. So that was in 1985. And the guy who composed the Frank O'Hara songs was Christopher Berg. And when he was living in San Francisco to stage that production, he said, "You should meet my friend Henry Mack," who he knew from New York. So I was introduced to Henry, who was, of course, a lyricist who'd been through the BMI workshop in Manhattan, where he was constrained from writing overtly gay songs, not from any real homophobia, but they were doing theater, you know, very traditional theater projects while they learned how to write musicals. But he kept writing gay songs. So he had a trunk full of them, and he trotted them out and started reading them for me. And being the sort of person I am, I immediately saw a through line, how an arrangement of those songs could tell a straightforward story. And from that came Dirty Dreams of a Clean-Cut Kid.
So you weren't just a co-director, you were involved in making it into a musical.
I was the actual motivating source who said, "I see the musical here." But it was Henry who knew the exact concept, which became the storyline. And I'm not sure if it's clear from the recording, the boys are in the waiting room of a HIV testing center where they're waiting for the results of their lab reports.
But here I am now.
And so the entire musical, the entire span of the performance takes place in the 1 minute while they're waiting. On stage, we slowed the music down at the end of the first song, waiting for the lab report, and brought time to a stop. And so everything else happens in their minds. They think back to the wanton days of sexual liberation. They think of their dreams for the future, for romance. You know, they go through all the emotional states you can go through. And at the very end of the musical, they come back to the present moment. And then, of course, we stop. They don't actually get their lab reports. That's left to the audience.
It's an excellent musical. The music is really, really well done.
I wasn't really surprised. I was very pleased and not at all surprised to find how well the music stood up. The last time I listened to the album, which was just about a month or so ago, one would think of it as a period piece. It was written in the white heat of the beginning of the AIDS epidemic and addressed an emotional need of its audience so greatly that, you know, there were tears nightly and the emotions of the time were running high. So as I say, I was pleased but not surprised to find out that the quality of the score, although the times have changed, the quality of the score, I think, and its emotional appeal holds up very well.
From it, here's the title track, Dirty Dreams of a Clean-Cut Kid.
How did I begin becoming the man I've been? How did I start learning what's deep in my heart? No violation or abomination made me dream I'd live the life I did. No, the ultimate determination was in dirty dreams of a clean-cut kid. It was my fevered teen imagination, wasn't something wild I went and did. My favorite adolescent recreation was in dirty dreams of a clean-cut kid. Each night I went to bed in bed fiction, not a dirty dream. And finding hot new furtive forms of friction that I would try so hard to keep well hid. But still I'd wake up overwhelmed with tension from dirty dreams I could not get rid. With dirty thoughts I thought I'd never mention when I was still such a clean cut kid. Mortification and ejaculation over dreams of stuff I never did. With masturbation, my preoccupation came with dirty dreams of a clean-cut kid. Mortification made me seek salvation from the scary stuff I never did. But with salvation and renunciation came more dirty dreams of a clean-cut kid. It was for naked guys and plastic oceans and the dirty dreams of a clean-cut kid. Set off my high strung closet case emotions and the dirty dreams I could not get rid. Which led to suicidal attack depressions, like when your super ego steals your id. And feeling deep inside found no expression for dirty dreams that I kept well hid. This sublimation led to desperation for the dirty stuff I never did. No preparation for my liberation, only dirty dreams of a clean-cut kid. Now jubilation at my inclination when I dream the dreams a gay man does.
I'm my imagination's own creation. I'm the dream come true of the kid I was. I wanna know how to make you happy. I wanna know how to make you scream. I wanna be your dirty dream. I've been having dirty dreams about you. I've been having dirty dreams about you. When I dream the dreams a gay man does, I'm my imagination's own creation. I'm the dream come true of the kid I was. I am the dirty dream I once kept so well hid. And deep inside that dream I am still the clean cut kid.
Again, that was the title track from Dirty Dreams of a Clean-Cut Kid. There was quite a bit more of my interview with John Carr that was excellent, but I just couldn't fit it on this show. But you can hear all of it from my website. AIDS was much on the minds of playwrights during the 90s. One of the musicals focusing on the loves and losses was called An Unfinished Song. It opened in New York in 1991, and a cast recording was done in 1995. One of the characters, Michael, has died, and his friends gather to reflect on his life. In this song, in a flashback, Michael sings to his lover about a time when they were trying to keep together their relationship.
There's the ocean, just the same as before. Look at her worth. Isn't she beautiful? The same ocean, washing dreams upon her shore. Do you remember? Huh? Such power, such grace, for you and I a place to run free. Just you and I and our ocean. I want to fight this, Worth. I don't know how, but I must be able to do something.
Michael.
No, look at us. In a few days, you'll be in Chicago. There's a breeze in the air, whispering words I can't bear to know.
Michael, don't.
Something lost, something found. Rearranged, it turned around, out of key. I don't want to lose you. I don't want to fight you. If we look to the ocean, we might remember yesterday.
That's just it. It was yesterday.
I look to the ocean, she's the same as before, but I'm not. The same ocean, crashing dreams upon her shore, with power and grace. For you and I, a place to run free. But there's a world beyond our ocean. How do we live there? You tell me. You can't let other people tell you how to live your life.
You also can't force people to accept something that they don't want to accept.
But you have to try.
Yeah, but at what cost? It doesn't seem to be very much for you.
How can you say that when I'm losing you?
You don't have to lose me.
But then I'd be losing myself.
So we just keep going around in circles. Why did we come back?
To make sure the ocean was still here. Just you and I and our ocean.
That was Remember the Ocean, and was from the show An Unfinished Song. The musical All That He Was from 1993 also dealt with reflecting on the life of a man who died of AIDS. Again, the play goes back in time to hear the deceased character sing, this time about happier days.
A tiny tree, a single strand of lights, a few small decorations, reds and greens, and yet to me the most beautiful of nights, not just for how it looks, for what it means. For it's our first tree in our first home, with our first wreath upon the door. And on this first Christmas, who knows what may lie in store? But may it be the first of many more. This Christmas Eve, the tree we have is small, and the gifts that lie beneath it may be few. Yet I'll receive the most cherished gift of all, to wake up Christmas morning next to you. For it's our first year in our first home, with our first wreath upon the door. And on this first Christmas, who knows what may lie in store? But may it be the first of many more. And on this first Christmas, the one gift I'm wishing for, may it be the first of many more.
This is a good time to remind you to be sure to listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Sunday morning from midnight to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Also, I invite you to check out my website at www.queermusicheritage.com, where you can view the playlist and see photos of the artists and recordings, and listen to the show anytime. In 1993, Tom Wilson Weinberg was back with another review, this one called Get Used to It. And you remember earlier in the show where Tom wrote a song for the musical 10% Review called And the Supremes. Well, for Get Used to It, there was another song that dealt with the sodomy laws called Breaking the Penal Code with You. Here's a little bit of it.
Welcome to Over the Rainbow Travel, gentlemen. If birds fly there, so can you. How may I help you?
My sweetie and I are planning a vacation.
We want to see this nation of ours.
You'll need a few facts. You'll need an education on the rules of the road, the way to behave
in the land of the free and the home of the brave.
First you'll see Virginia, 'cause Virginia is for lovers. But someone's keeping track of Virginians under the covers. Intercourse for breeding is all that they permit. But while you're in Virginia, you'll find crimes to commit.
I'll be breaking the penal code with you, doing the things we want to do. If courts and legislatures break rules of Mother Nature's, I'll break the penal code with you.
Tom tells us a little about his second show.
Get Used to It was my second musical review. I continued to write after 10% Review, but I really wanted 10% Review to stay fixed. I didn't want to keep changing the material, although sometimes I did do that because it's a luxury with a musical review. You know, if you're putting on Oklahoma or Sweeney Todd, it's set. Every word, every note of music really should be the same or almost the same from performance to performance. But with a musical review, if stuff is dated or not working, you can take it out and pop something else in. But I tried to keep 10% Review as fixed as possible, and I kept writing, and pretty soon I had a body of material that felt like it was ready for an independent production. And my good friend and musical director at that time, Wayne Barker, and I went to see John Glines, a producer in New York, who had taken Torch Song Trilogy to Broadway, won a Tony Award, had also produced a wonderful AIDS play called As Is. And we played some of the material for him, and he said yes, he'd like to produce it off Broadway. And he did. And this was in 92, and we had a good run. We were at the Courtyard Playhouse, which is now called the Grove Street Playhouse. And I'm very proud of the show, and I'm particularly proud of the CD. It's performed by wonderful singers, and Wayne Barker produced and accompanied the CD, and it's really just a great piece of work, in my humble opinion. The show did not have the same success the 10% Review had. It's had a number of productions, and they've been successful, but not nearly the amount of exposure of 10% Review, which I've settled with that now. But for a long time, I was quite frustrated by it because I felt that it was a stronger show, that the material is more mature, and I wanted everyone to hear it, at least as many people as heard 10% Review. And to some degree, that ain't going to happen, but a lot of people continue to purchase the CD, and that's a good way for people to experience that show.
One of my favorite songs from Get Used to It is this one called Hymn.
Thank God for a country that demands religious freedom. Thank God for a church on every corner when we need 'em. Thank God for the campaign speeches given from the altars. Thank God for the candidate who blesses his exalters.
Thank God for the neon crosses blazing in the dark.
Thank God for the manger scenes displayed on public parkland.
Thank God for the bullhorns when they amplify the preaching. Thank God for the court decisions based on sacred teaching.
Thank God for the oath of office sworn upon the Bible. Thank God for protecting his good name on threat of libel.
Thank God for the day we wrote, in God we trust, on our dollars.
Thank God for the airwaves overrun with Christian scholars.
Ooh, thank God for the blessing to be joined in matrimony. Thank God for so help me God before the testimony. Thank God for our justices when they condemn a sinner. Thank God for a Hebrew prayer before.
for a White House dinner.
And thank God for the promise of complete redemption. Thank God for the Holy Church's tax exemption. Thank God for the freedom to accept our fate. Thank God for the separation of church and state.
Next is The Ballad of Little Mikey. This was one of the better gay musicals of the 90s, and the story is set in the early 80s and chronicles, as one reviewer put it, the title character's journey out of the closet, through the tea room, and into gay activism and romance. In this song, Mikey and his friends celebrate a new gay student newspaper.
To 10%!
To 10%!
The official organ of the gay people's revolution!
To our organ!
To our revolution!
And to Clay, may he use his new organ well!
And to this college, for giving money to a newspaper for faggots!
Oh dear!
One more step on the road to freedom, it feels like we're breaking through.
One more step on the road to freedom, hopes are becoming plans,
and they're coming true.
I have a dream of a perfect world where boys meet boys in the mall, and boys take boys out onto the dance floor with no reaction at all. Boys will be holding hands in the movies, kissing hello on the street. I'll say to my boss at the company picnic, "Sir, meet my lover. Isn't he sweet?"
Well, I have a dream of a perfect world where designers arrange our lives. Sports will die out and culture take over. Glamour and style will thrive. Straight men will sit watching ballet for hours, trying to act like they care. And 10% will be on coffee tables in good homes everywhere.
Well, now that we've got a paper, it seems it's starting to come true.
One more step on the road to freedom, I believe our freedom is gonna come true.
I have a dream of a perfect world where everyone lives at the gym. Every bottle be buffed to perfection, cited for not being trim. No one will care how much money you make, you'll be judged by the size of your pecs. Instead of shaking hands hello, you'll take off your shirt and flex.
Well, I have a dream of a perfect world where a gay politician can run. If we had gays in the House and the Senate, wouldn't the country run fun? Maybe one day I'll try for the White House, a platform they've never seen. How about this for a campaign slogan? America needs a queen!
And maybe all of our fanciful dreams are too good to be true, but we took
one more step on the road to freedom.
A baby step on the road to freedom.
One more step on the road to freedom. I believe our freedom is gonna come through. To 10%!
But not every musical from the 90s was about AIDS or activism. Also from 1995 came this lighthearted gay version of Love Boat called Cruisin'. It came out of Toronto. From it, here's the song, The Evening After.
Oh God, this is the morning after. Did Shelley Winters have to drown? And now I want her swimming medal. It'll go so well with my new gown.
Oh, how I hate the morning after. The song as well. Six layers of MAC makeup. Sometimes I buy it by the brick. Is it too late? I'm almost 30. I know that somewhere there's a my right hand.
there is an evening after. After all, I brought 8 pairs of pumps, but all these stairs are unforgiving. Why am I stuck here on this dump?
If I could swim, and get the hell back to that shore. My legs are trim for a 49er, but where's the hymn? I need someone to drown for. There's got to be an evening after.
Subsequently,
following,
almost,
during,
halfway behind, in back of, and oh yes, after the evening.
As I read the daily paper, I'm more and more amazed at a world that once was easy to define. For today I read a warning on this balmy summer morning of June 28th, 1969. It says here, whenever you see a homosexual walking by, give him a smile and wave and call a cheery hi. Don't degrade him as you may usually do. Don't forget that homos may have feelings too. Whenever you see a pair of lesbians in the street, say howdy do or something equally sweet. Don't revile them or otherwise criticize, or you may be in for a little surprise. It seems that there's an inn, an inn with homos within, a charming, adorable place, unassuming and quiet. But last night when the police came to establish some peace, the charming, adorable customers started a riot. So when you see two women walking arm in arm, don't give them any cause to feel alarmed. Don't throw rocks and bellow,
hey, you lumberjack,
'cause the lesbians and gays are fighting back. The lesbians and gays are fighting back. Smile and say hello to any homo that you see on the street.
Following The Evening After from Cruising, you heard one from another gay musical, Fairy Tales. That song was called Stonewall Serenade, and the musical was written by Eric Lane Barnes. An excellent local production of the show was done in 2000 at Theater New West. The show is more of a review, no plot, but I think very interesting songs. We're still in 1995, and a musical called Most Men Are also dealt with AIDS, and the song from it, Better Not to Know, tells one aspect of it.
I've got a lifeline long and unbroken, but sometimes my fortune is best left unspoken. I've got an eight ball, it answers questions, 'cause sometimes my future is ripe for suggestions. I've never asked if I'm the next to go. Sometimes it's better not to know. Called up the doctor, I was congested. Perfect excuse to finally be tested. Got to the building, that's when I realized I'm still immortal, life still idealized. I didn't cancel, I just didn't show. Sometimes it's better not to know. And I suppose that sometimes it's better to face. I know that it's the only way to gain in the race. But I can't be like everyone, I've got my own pace. Why not prolong the doom of being one added case? I've had a nightmare quite realistic. Still, my facade is so optimistic. Always a strain, but I can conceal it. Stays on my mind, but I don't reveal it. I'm still a little boy from Idaho. Sometimes it's better not to grow. Sometimes it's better not to know.
For a change of pace, we go to Australia for the musical Only Heaven Knows. It was originally produced in 1988 and was finally recorded in 1995. The story takes place in Sydney during the First World War, and the two men who meet and become lovers sing these songs to each other, Without Him and Only Heaven Knows.
I would never leave you. I would never leave you alone. You're everything to me. But life now has to be without you. I would never hurt you. I would never hurt you, my love. You mean the world to me. Can't you see? I love you. And only heaven knows. I don't suppose you mind me saying, I hope when my life is through, somehow there'll be some way of knowing that my love will be with you in things you do, in all that's growing. And I swear to you, only heaven, heaven knows. Only heaven knows. I don't suppose you mind me saying, I hope when my life is through, somehow there'll be some way of knowing my love is there with you in things you do, in all that's growing. And I swear to you, and only heaven, heaven knows.
The title song was sung by David Campbell, who on his own is an excellent cabaret artist. Well, I'm afraid we're running out of time for tonight's show, and I didn't get nearly as far as I wanted. But we covered 10 years. That's pretty good. I've got one more to share with you, and it's a bit strange. But before I do, I want to thank you all for tuning into the show. And I want to thank Tom Wilson Weinberg, Cappy Kotz, and John Carr for the interview comments. If you have questions or comments about any of the music I've featured, please write to me at qmheritage@aol.com. And please check out my website, logically enough, at www.queermusicheritage.com, where you can see photos of all the recordings I played tonight, and also a special reference section I've set up on gay musicals. And also, I poured through my archives and found photos from many of the shows themselves. They're on the site, too. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston, and I'll be back on the fourth Monday of next month with another installment of Queer Music Heritage. The last musical for tonight was written by Howard Crabtree. Crabtree was famous for his humorous musicals just packed full of outrageous costumes. In 1997, he had a big hit with When Pigs Fly, but that's getting ahead of things. In 1995, he debuted one called Whoop-Dee-Doo. It was a smash and won New York Drama Desk Awards for Best Musical Revue and Best Costumes. Subject-wise, the songs were all over the map and all campy and fabulous. The one that appealed to me most was called Tough to Be a Fairy, and I'll also let you hear the skit that introduces it. From Whoop-Dee-Doo, I know you'll enjoy Tough to Be a Fairy.
So I told him, I said, "Look, you putz, I'm a fairy. I'm here to grant you one wish. I don't know where they get this crap about three wishes. I mean, the nerve of that guy."
"Ah, they're all holes. Hey, pass me a sugar plum, will you?
Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God.
What?
Look, you guys, I've got some terrible news. Brace yourselves."
"Well, don't get your wings in a twist. Here, put down that wand and have a drink."
"What? What is it?"
"It's the Tooth Fairy."
"No! What happened?"
"She was mugged."
"Those sons of bitches."
"Well, it was bound to happen. A single fairy traveling alone at night with all those quarters."
"It's a dark age."
"You can say that again. Once upon a time, not so long ago, we took the magic for granted. But now all the rainbows are turning to gray. The elves and the pixies don't come out to play. Hell, even Miss Tinkerbell's fading away. It's hard not to be disenchanted. These days it's tough to be a fairy. It's a hairy situation, sad to say. Our population's shrinking as our tribulations grow. Sometimes we think extinction's brink is closer than we know."
"Don't say that."
"Once fun and games were customary. Now fairy tales get grimmer every day. But when the going gets tough, the tough get going. We're here to stay whichever way the wind is blowing. So if it's tough to be a fairy, we'll tough it out and be okay."
"Yeah, you won't find me packing up my fairy dust."
"We can't. The world couldn't get along without us."
"But you gotta have character to be a fairy in this day and age."
"You're right. These days it's tough to be a fairy. It's a scary proposition, this is true.
But don't marinate your memories in vats of 90 proof. Remembering when you waved your wand and made a great big poof.
Hey! Why sit there like a dingleberry? Get out and spread your wings and don't be blue. When the action gets rough, the rough take action. Get fighting mad and send the bad guys into traction. So if it's tough to be a fairy, we'll tough it out and make it through. Just remember when your spirits start to head downhill. Hell, if we don't believe in fairies, then who will?
Right!
So if it's tough to be a fairy,